Our guest is medical doctor, Dr. Akbar Khan. Dr. Khan is a graduate of the University of Toronto Faculty of Medicine in 1992, and he completed his certification in family medicine in 1994. He is the co-founder of Medicor Cancer Centers with his wife in 2006, and Medicor is the first integrated private cancer clinic of its kind in Canada. And the goal of Dr. Khan's in opening this clinic was to provide better therapies for people who have a cancer diagnosis without the limitations of the government-funded Canadian health system. Since 2007, Dr. Khan has gained international recognition for his work with non-toxic off-label drugs, and he's published groundbreaking cancer papers in various peer-reviewed medical journals. He's an avid publisher of case studies. He's really helping to advance our understanding of a lot of these things, and he's also regularly invited to present lectures on complementary cancer therapy. So it's really my pleasure to have you on the show tonight, Dr. Khan. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Lisa. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Absolutely. Well, as I said, I've been looking forward to this topic. Low-dose naltrexone is something I integrate into my practice, and selfishly, I'm looking forward to learning a few more things about it from you, and I know I get a lot of questions about it, too, so I think that this really is going to be of great interest for people. But before we dive into that, we like to give our listeners a little bit more of an understanding of who they're listening to. So what led you from family practice to your current focus on integrative cancer care?
So I started my practice almost immediately when I graduated in pain management and palliative medicine. Pain management was an interest of mine because I felt that doctors were really not well educated and patients, I think, were suffering unnecessarily. So that was my interest, and because of that work, I started being exposed to cancer patients quite a bit. Naturally, because you know, advanced stage cancer patients have a lot of pain issues and quality of life issues. So over the years in working with cancer patients, I really got asked a lot of questions about non-standard therapies, because a lot of these patients who had failed conventional therapies were looking on their own to try to find what else they could use to treat themselves. And initially, I was pretty much a conventionally trained doctor, and patients would ask me about things like vitamins and natural medicines, and I would pretty much, you know, poo-poo them and just say, oh, well, I don't know, there's not good research on that, and, you know, the typical sort of response you get from most doctors, right? That was me. But when I decided to open a private clinic with the goal to bring improved treatments to cancer patients, at that point, we hired a naturopathic doctor. And just observing her, I started to learn that the real benefits of natural therapies. I was a disbeliever, but you know, I brought her on board basically because I knew that patients were demanding these types of therapies, and so I said, okay, well, we're going to bring it to the patient under medical supervision. But I wasn't necessarily confident that those therapies were going to help. As soon as I started to observe the naturopathic doctor, I could see dramatic improvements in our patients. And that's really what got me started in my interest in complementary medicines and natural medicines, because the results were just obvious. You know, you didn't need a study to prove that, let's say, intravenous vitamin C, you know, helps people who are taking chemotherapy.
So yeah,
that's
so you really
how I got started.
That's great. So you saw firsthand the benefits, and that has led you to a very committed career in this whole area, for which we're all grateful. So I know that you can talk about a lot of different complementary and off-label therapies, but I want to really focus tonight's conversation on low-dose naltrexone. So let's start by making sure that we're all on the same page. So can you describe what low-dose naltrexone is?
Sure, yeah. So as you said, naltrexone is an opiate antagonist, which means it's a drug that blocks the effect of opiates, which would be medicines like morphine, codeine, heroin, that sort of thing. So your listeners may be familiar with this type of drug. There's been a lot of discussion in the news lately about heroin overdoses and first responders having access to a drug called naloxone, which is related to naltrexone. It's an injection that naloxone is an injection that you know, police or ambulance attendants can use to treat a heroin addict who's had an overdose and to bring them out of it. So naltrexone is very similar, but it's an oral medication. And so it's an antidote to morphine-type drugs or opiates. And the normal dose, as you said, is used for addiction treatment. And that's a 50-milligram pill that it comes in. So that's a standard drug. The low-dose naltrexone, we're talking about a dose that's about a tenth of the dose of the standard pill. So at the most, you know, we would never give more than 5 milligrams. Usually the dose would be ranging from 3 to 4.5 milligrams once a day. So that's what we call low-dose naltrexone.
Okay, so at low dose, this low-dosed or low-dose naltrexone, or it's often just called LDN, which is the abbreviation of low-dose naltrexone, it still binds to the opioid receptors. So let's just talk a little bit about the opioid receptors. Where are these receptors in the human body?
Sure. Okay. So the opiate receptors are mainly found in the brain and the spinal cord, and there's also opiate receptors found in the gut, in the bowels, and stomach. And something that maybe most doctors are even not aware of, and this is probably newer information, is the opiate receptors are also found in the immune system, so in the immune cells, like lymphocytes, for example, and the opiate receptors are found in cancer cells. And one of the functions of the opiates, or certain opiates in particular, is to regulate cell growth and also to regulate the immune system. So that's where low-dose naltrexone has its effect in treating cancer.
Yeah, so let's dive into that a little bit. And I know this can be a little complicated or confusing, but let's talk a little bit about this. So low-dose naltrexone binds to these opioid receptors. Let's start with the immune cell. Now, one of the things is that the binding of low-dose naltrexone to the receptor is temporary, so it doesn't stay stuck on that receptor for too long. So what happens as a result of that binding to the function of that immune cell?
Yeah, exactly. So the low-dose naltrexone, the difference between the full dose and low dose is that because the dose is so low, the medicine doesn't stay in the body that long, just for a few hours. And so it blocks the receptors for, let's say, 3 to 4 hours. And the effect of that is there's a paradoxical increase in the natural opiates that your body produces because your body can sense that blockage. So what happens is you get a boost in your natural opiates or your endorphins. And by the time that happens, the naltrexone, it wears off because the dose is so low. So the effect of low-dose naltrexone, even though it's an opiate blocker, is a paradoxical increase in your natural opiate levels in the body.
So just to fill that story in a little bit, so when the natural, you know, either exogenous or in this case the body's produced opioids and endorphins bind to those now unblocked receptors on the immune cells because the low-dose naltrexone has worn off, that has a stimulating effect on those immune cells' activity, yes?
Exactly, yes. So it can stimulate the immune system, and the key is that it doesn't overstimulate. So it's interesting. You can use low-dose naltrexone to treat cancer in which, you know, you have a suppression of your immune system due to the cancer itself. So in this case, it's kind of boosting your immune system. And on the other hand, you can also use low-dose naltrexone to treat autoimmune disease where the immune system is overactive. So in a sense, it's regulating the immune system back towards a normal level of function. It's not just a straight boost or a straight reduction of immune function.
And does that have to do with the kind of immune cells that are more sensitive to the effects of the low-dose naltrexone?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. And one of the effects is on natural killer cells. So low-dose naltrexone, by boosting your natural opiates, or in particular an opiate called OGF, or opioid growth factor, that has a positive effect on natural killer function, which then can attack cancer cells.
Okay. All right. Well, that was a fantastic start. We're going to learn lots more. Stay with us. It is time for our first break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 5 to Thrive Live. I'm Dr. Lisa Schuler, and I'm here with my guest, Dr. Akbar Khan, and our topic is low-dose naltrexone. So before the break, we went through a little bit about how low-dose naltrexone binds to receptors, which kind of act like little baskets on the surface of cells, and they're found throughout the body in the nervous system, in the digestive tract, and on immune cells. And when it's used as low-dose, naltrexone binds to these receptors, these opioid receptors, doesn't hang out there very long, maybe a few hours, 3 to 5 hours or so. And while that binding is there, Dr. Khan was explaining that the opioids are blocked, so the body senses that blockage and responds by increasing the production of opioids. And then when that low-dose naltrexone is no longer bound to the receptor, the now higher level of opioids are free to bind to those receptors. And when they bind to receptors on immune cells, they have an immune regulating effect. So they tend to increase certain aspects of immunity, things like natural killer cells, which are really important in cancer control. And at the same time, they tend to downregulate immune cells that are involved, for example, in antibody production, which has, you know, clear implication for autoimmune disease. We'll get to that in a moment. So we kind of went through all that mechanism, which I just summarized for you because it's a little bit complex. So given all that, Dr. Khan, what do we know about the magnitude of the effect or the degree of the effect on immunity from low-dose naltrexone?
Yeah, so there is you know, quite extensive lab research that shows the effects of the well, basically the secondary effects of low-dose naltrexone, which is the boost in the opiates. So one of the main opiates or endorphins that's naturally produced in the body that has been studied is called OGF, or opioid growth factor. And there's extensive data on that that shows how that natural chemical produced by the body can regulate cell growth, but it can actually stop cancer cells from growing, and it can improve immune function. And the action in cancer cells, it can basically work in any type of cancer because almost every cancer has an abundance of these opiate receptors in them.
So you're making an important point that when that opioid growth factor binds to an opioid receptor on an immune cell, you get kind of an immune strengthening or regulating effect to the benefit, of course, of the person. When it binds to the same receptor on a cancer cell, it has a different function. So when it binds to the receptor on a cancer cell, it actually downregulates the ability of that cancer cell to proliferate and grow.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, so that differential makes it, of course, potentially quite powerful. So how useful is low-dose naltrexone in the prevention, let's say, of cancer?
Well, I'm very impressed with it, and we actually are using it for prevention now, too, even though there's no formal study that has shown that low-dose naltrexone can prevent cancer, because such a study would take, you know, probably 10 or 15 years to conduct and hundreds of millions of dollars, so nobody's going to do that. But we do have data that shows how low-dose naltrexone, by regulating the immune system, it can reduce harmful inflammation in the body. And we know that harmful inflammation is one of the trigger factors that can cause cancer. So it's kind of a secondary effect because it reduces harmful inflammation. We know that it can reduce or prevent cancer from occurring.
So that's kind of another result, if you will, of that immune regulating effect, that reduced inflammation. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, and are there any animal studies on cancer, that sort of models of cancer prevention that you know of?
Well, I know that there are lab studies on cancer prevention, on reducing harmful inflammation. Animal studies, I don't know, there's a lot of new stuff always coming out. Maybe you've heard of something. I haven't.
I have not. No, I was just curious if you had. Okay. So we'll look for that.
Yeah.
So I know that prevention is compelling, but there's not, as you said, as much data. What about in terms of treating cancer? Can it be used as a part of a cancer treatment, sole treatment, any particular types of cancer, stages of cancer?
Okay, so yeah, we've been using it for about 10 years now. And what we've learned is, yes, it definitely can be used in cancer treatment. One is it can be used as a standalone. It is a gentler cancer treatment, and you may not see results immediately. And certain cancers, which are maybe very rapidly growing, it probably is not appropriate for most of those types of cancer because it takes time to work. But what we find is, as a standalone, it's actually quite a good treatment for patients that have a minimal amount of disease in their body, regardless of the cancer type. And also cancers that are maybe slower growing, more what we call well-differentiated or less aggressive types when you look under the microscope. Those are more suited, I think, to using low-dose naltrexone. And this is a standalone. So we've seen it work quite well as a standalone. But what I believe is it works even better when you combine it with other things, especially with other gentle medicines and natural medicines. I can give you a few examples, you know, what we've seen in, over the years. One of our first patients had muscle-invasive bladder cancer. And I say had because he no longer has it, but he did have quite an aggressive bladder cancer, and he was told he had to have his bladder removed and have a permanent urine drain bag attached to his abdomen, and he refused that because of obvious, you know, reduction of quality of life. So we treated him with low-dose naltrexone, and he was doing okay. I mean, the cancer had stopped growing, but then he combined it with a treatment called BCG, which is an immune therapy, which is bacteria injected into the bladder. So one treatment of BCG combined with low-dose naltrexone, it cured his muscle-invasive bladder cancer. And he was over, I think last time I checked, probably 8 years cancer-free. So that's one of our earliest experiences with low-dose naltrexone in combination with another treatment that's also an immune therapy.
Yeah, and just of note, that BCG is a part of standard conventional care, but typically used in earlier stage bladder cancers with excellent results, I might add. So it sounds like what you were able to do is create a responsiveness at a later stage to that therapy.
Exactly. So, yeah, they don't use BCG for muscle invasive. The treatment for that is the surgical removal of the bladder. But the BCG apparently was boosted by the LDN, or the LDN boosted by the BCG, whichever way. And this fellow did amazingly well. And I've seen other cases of bladder cancer, too, even cases that have failed to respond to chemotherapy and failed to respond to BCG. And we've treated with just plain low-dose naltrexone and maybe some vitamin D and, you know, a couple other supplements. And, again, excellent results where the cancer goes into remission. And these patients can be chronically well. They can be, they can certainly have the appearance of being cancer-free for years. We don't know if they're truly cured or not, because they remain on treatment and they remain cancer-free.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to something you said, because I think this is important. The sounds like there's a bit of a window of opportunity for the maximum benefit of LDN. So I'm going to give you some scenarios, and you can say, yep, that's a great candidate, or no, not so much. So somebody with early stage, say stage one in most cancer types, maybe stage two, so kind of locally confined tumor that's not growing super aggressively, so there's a little bit of time element, that person is a candidate for LDN?
That's a perfect candidate, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, because a lot of these patients, when they see an oncologist, they're told watch and wait, you know, where they're, because the cancer's is strange to me, but this is the truth. They're told watch and wait because the cancer is too early for chemotherapy or a more aggressive therapy, and this is a perfect opportunity for LDN.
So, for example, a lot of early-stage prostate cancers fall into that category. Some early-stage breast cancers fall into that category. Some other types of cancer that are maybe more rare. So all of those would be potential candidates.
Yeah, that's perfect. Those are ideal candidates.
Okay, so what about somebody who has been through treatment and they are being monitored, then they get a solitary recurrence and or maybe a small number of recurrences. Let's take, again, breast cancer with bone metastases. Sometimes those bone metastases are also rather slow growing. What about that person?
Yeah, I mean, it can still be used. So you can use it on its own. You can use it in combination with other gentle or natural therapies. But also there's new data that shows that it can be used in combination with conventional chemotherapy, and it should actually enhance the chemotherapy if it's taken on a cycle, on an intermittent treatment schedule with the chemotherapy.
Okay, we'll come back to that cycling in a moment. And then my last scenario for you, because I get asked this a lot too, is what about people who have, say, chronic lymphocytic leukemia or lymphomas? Those can be also rather slow growing. It's an immune cancer. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, again, that's a perfect scenario because a lot of these CLL patients, they're told, again, watch and wait. So there's really no conflict with the oncologist because they're not treating these patients anyway. And we've seen some great results where we can not only stabilize the cancer, but we even see reduction in the cancer cell numbers. And lymphomas too, we've had some great results with lymphoma too. And even recurrent cases where they failed, first line or second line chemotherapy, and we still see low dose naltrexone working in some of those patients. Because it's a different mechanism. So even if they're chemo-resistant, it can still work.
Okay. And I know you said that you haven't seen as good of a result with aggressive cancers. There is at least one published case study that looked at couple cases of pancreatic cancer, which generally is one of the more aggressive, fast-growing, less well-differentiated cancer types. And low-dose naltrexone combined with alpha-lipoic acid and vitamin C was helpful. Have you seen in that scenario and maybe even with that combination some benefits?
So, Dr. Bergson has published some case reports of excellent results with pancreatic cancer. Pancreatic cancer, as you know, tends to be quite aggressive, and usually I'm afraid to use such a gentle therapy of low-dose naltrexone with pancreatic. We usually go with more powerful medicines for that cancer. So just for that reason, mainly my fear and that we haven't used it as much for pancreatic despite Bergson's excellent publications. So I think that, he's right. Obviously, he's seen the results. I just find overall I prefer to use it for more slow-growing cancers, but that's not to say it won't work for the more rapid ones. I just think that, it could get away from you. And so that's why I'm a little bit hesitant to use that as the first choice.
Okay. So one last scenario for you. Let's say there's somebody who has ovarian cancer diagnosed, and, with ovarian cancer, there's a tumor marker that can be followed, which gives a really early indication of disease activity. So with that, how long would it take for the tumor marker to start responding to the LDN in sort of an average person, which I know doesn't really exist, but we'll pretend for a moment?
Yeah, we usually say give it about 3 months. But for more slow-growing cancers, if it's really quite a slow cancer in the first place, then I think you need even more time to really fully evaluate the LDN. So I would say up to even 6 months.
Mm-hmm. So at least things shouldn't be getting worse over that time period, but you might not see really good reversal or anything.
Yeah, you might not see the results initially. Maybe only after 3 or 4 months you're going to see an improvement in the marker. I've had a colon cancer patient, which I present at some of my talks, and this gentleman had, for colon cancer, there's another tumor marker called a CEA, which is, again, similar to CA125 for ovarian. So this fellow, his CEA was actually climbing during the first 3 months on LDN, and then after the third month, it stabilized, so it stopped going up, and then by the fourth and fifth month, it actually started to fall. And then we had confirmation of response by colonoscopy, which showed stability or slight reduction of his cancer. So
yeah.
I think you need to give it some time, I think. But that doesn't mean that, everybody's going to take 3 months. Like Bergson's cases, the pancreatic cases, they've responded faster.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good reminder just to kind of stick with it. And we'll talk about the side effect profile or lack thereof in a moment. But the time element is important. Before I forget this question, I want to ask you because, of course, nowadays I think 9 out of 10 of my patients ask me about cannabis or cannabinoids as part of their treatment for cancer. The data isn't strong yet, but certainly it's growing. And that, too, binds to similar receptors in the same family. So what do you think about that combination? Is that a good idea, not a good idea? Have you tried it?
Yeah, we have tried it, and we've seen really no issues combining the two. I can't say I have a good case where I have a patient who took only cannabis and LDN, so I can't tell you how synergistic they are, but at least in theory, I would have no problem combining the two.
Okay. All right. Good to know. So before we get to dosing, because that's a whole other interesting sort of a thing to consider. I want to talk a little bit about autoimmune disease, because really this is where there's a lot of interest and activity, and I think people who have autoimmune disease who are involved in any support groups have heard about low-dose naltrexone. So tell us a little bit about why this is such a big deal for autoimmune disease.
Yeah, so it's actually quite revolutionary for autoimmune disease, because the standard treatments for autoimmune disease almost all involve suppression of the immune system. So the standard treatments are actually dangerous. Your listeners probably seen ads on TV for different treatments for rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis, and if you listen to the side effect profile, some of the side effects could include serious infections like tuberculosis or even cancer, years down the road because of chronic immune suppression. And life-threatening infections. So LDN is quite significant because it has none of those side effects, yet it can treat autoimmune disease, sometimes even very severe disease, with really minimal side effects.
Mm-hmm. And combines really well in that regard with vitamin D in particular, yes?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, vitamin D is my first treatment for any autoimmune disease, high-dose vitamin D. And I'm sure you can talk about that in a whole other hour show.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not even enough to talk about vitamin D. But yes, we usually use, we start around 5,000 units a day for most adults. And I've used up to 20,000 per day for some people that don't absorb it that well. But we always monitor blood levels, and we aim for kind of the upper end of the normal range for vitamin D blood levels.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think both you and I have seen patients with tremendous responses to low-dose naltrexone with various autoimmune diseases. I mean, I have, kind of those remarkable stories of people with MS having just amazing reversals of their symptoms to psoriatic arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis and all sorts of things. What about, to conclude, definitely if you know somebody who has autoimmune disease, ask your doctor or find an integrative practitioner who's willing to talk to you about low-dose naltrexone as an option. What about inflammatory bowel disease? What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, so for sure, low-dose naltrexone should be considered. Now, just a reminder that not every single person is going to respond to it, but there's a very good percentage that will respond, and many patients will even have a remission of their autoimmune disease. So for colitis, Crohn's, absolutely. Combine it with high-dose vitamin D and combine it with, whatever suitable natural regimen with proper nutritional support. So it really is vital to see a doctor who is an expert in this type of thing. So really, they should be seeing a naturopathic doctor or an integrative medical doctor.
Yeah, and you make a really good point. This is not a magic bullet, even though we're talking about it and isolating it as if it was. It's always in the context of doing other things to really deal with the underlying issues of the disorder. So with both autoimmune diseases and inflammatory bowel diseases, cancer, there are other issues at play that need to be addressed for maximum effect. Nutritional issues, dietary issues, lifestyle issues, all sorts of things. So yeah, I agree with you 100% on that, and it's a good reminder. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about dosage. So how's LDN typically used?
So the way we use it typically is we start with a low dose and we build it up. And the doctor who originally researched it, Dr. Bihari, who was from New York, he determined that it seems to be more effective if you give it at bedtime. Although I have spoken to other doctors now who are using it in morning dosing and they're still seeing results. But at least in theory, we prefer to give it at bedtime, and we would start with maybe, I usually start around 2 milligrams a day at bedtime, and then I increase it gradually up to 4 or 4.5. And some people actually do better with a little lower dose, like maybe around 3 milligrams. The issue with that is the main side effect of LDN is vivid dreams or insomnia and disruption of sleep, yet it probably works better given at bedtime. The way we get around that is we would give a supplement, a natural supplement such as a magnolia extract or melatonin or something to help with sleep. And also by gradually increasing the dose, it seems to get people more used to the medicine, and they have less less side effects, less disruption of their sleep.
And is that the only side effect?
I mean, I've seen a few other weird things, but the main side effect really would be insomnia and vivid dreams. And I don't know, what else are you seeing in your practice?
Yeah, you know, that's really the only... I had one patient who developed a rash, but I think it was how it was compounded. So I should make note that this low-dose naltrexone has to be made by a compounding pharmacy. It's not available just in a package.
Right,
and
correct.
So it's really important that it's made by a really good compounding pharmacy who does sterile technique and all of that, so it's well made.
Yes, and we've actually seen we've seen errors with compounding. Even the pharmacy that we deal with, we test every batch to make sure that the strength is correct. And we had a batch, we had a bad batch once, and the pharmacy, you know, they detected that because we asked for testing and they threw it out. So it really is important to have not only an expert compounding pharmacy, but probably one that does random testing of the potency of the capsules as well.
Mm-hmm. So it binds to opioid receptors. Is it addictive in any way?
Not at all. No, there's no addictive potential at all. You know, in theory, if you use any sort of opiate, and you administered an opiate, that could create addiction. And because LDN is boosting your natural opiates, maybe people have said that in theory it could create an addiction, but really it's not that powerful. So what we find is there may be a mild pleasure sensation from it, but as far as I know, there's no abuse liability.
One of the questions that that I have is around this idea of dosing it. So it's a very short, relatively speaking, half-life. As you mentioned, let's just say 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours. So you're trying to store up opioids over that 4 to 6 hours, and then the opioids wear off, and then all of a sudden opioids that your body's produced bind to those receptors, and you get the immune stimulation. So that's all well and good. That can happen easily within a 24-hour period, which is why generally we dose it every night. There's a theory that's sort of circulating really just on various websites, and I was doing it for a while, and then I sort of stopped and thought, why am I doing this? So I'm going to ask you what you think about this intermittent dosing, where you take the LDN for 4 nights out of every week, and then you don't take it at all for 3 nights.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't tried that. I've heard people ask about intermittent use, and as far as I'm concerned, the way we're doing it daily, it is actually intermittent use because, mm-hmm. as you said, the drug doesn't last that long. So suppose it lasts 4 hours, then you have 4 hours out of 24 hours where the drug is acting, and the rest of the time it's not. So to me, that is intermittent use. And as far as I know, it has not clearly been defined whether it's actually better to take it for several days and then take several days off. So we actually don't do that. And the results we've got are with daily use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was, as I said, I kind of jumped into that pattern for a while, but I've stopped also because I thought, you know, I have been using this for a long time, and the results that I have been from daily use, so I'm going to stick with,
right.
with what I know.
Sure.
So the other question I have is, in terms of, you mentioned opioid medication, I've also heard actually that taking when you're on opioids, low-dose naltrexone wouldn't really work very well because you don't really get that buildup. So that would be considered a contraindication. Are there any other contraindications with, like, in terms of medications?
Yeah, so the main issue is you cannot or you should not use it with anybody who's taking a long-acting opiate, let's say, a time-release morphine, a time-release hydromorphone, methadone, a continuous infusion, like a pain pump, any of those things. If you add LDN, you're going to have some problems. You know, you're going to put your patient into opiate withdrawal, which means that they're going to be in pain, they'll probably be vomiting. They will not thank you for that. So so that's the main contraindication.
Okay, right. And otherwise, any other medication, as far as we know, is fine to take.
Yeah, it should be fine. I've not come across any like drug interactions. The only thing is like long acting or continuous opiate. You don't use it at the same time.
Yeah. So one last question before we take our second break. You mentioned that when you give it concurrent with chemotherapy, you cycle it with the chemotherapy. So can you explain what you mean by that?
So there is a new study that just came out, I think it was 2016, by a group in England, Professor Dalglish, and they did extensive in vitro studies looking at human cancer cells in the lab and exposing them to LDN in different concentrations. So they did low-dose naltrexone, and they compared it actually to regular-dose naltrexone, which they simulated in their lab studies. And they found that there was actually better synergism with the chemo when they took a break around the time of chemo. So they cycled it. They give 2 days of treatment, then a day break, and then the chemo, and the LDN actually worked better that way.
So in humans, that translates. So let's say somebody is getting chemotherapy every 3 weeks, so you would stop the low-dose naltrexone the day before the chemotherapy. They wouldn't take it that night.
Yeah, that's kind of what we do. So if, the day before the chemo, we would stop it, and then probably 3 or 4 days after, we'd restart it again.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Well, let's. We're going to learn a little bit more. We got time for a little bit more from Dr. Khan, so stay with us. Come back when we finish our second break. Welcome back to 5 to Thrive Live. I'm Dr. Lisa Schuler, and I'm talking with Dr. Akbar Khan about low-dose naltrexone. I think it's been a fascinating conversation, and I hope you do as well. So, you know, Dr. Khan, there are, as I mentioned, I think at the beginning of this show, there definitely are some really great clinical studies, some case reports that have been published, and you've been the author of several of those, which make very compelling arguments for clinical trials with low-dose naltrexone. To my knowledge, there's not been any completed low-dose naltrexone clinical studies in the area of cancer. There are clinical studies with inflammatory bowel disease and I think with autoimmune disease, but not in cancer. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, if you have any thoughts on that, and if you could design a study, wave your magic clinical trial wand, what study would you like to see?
Yeah, so so there are no completed human clinical trials on cancer with a treatment with LDN, as you say, which that's correct. There are a couple of human trials that were looking at quality of life in cancer patients. And so we can draw an inference from those because there was a study on glioma and a study on leukemia that showed improvement in quality of life with LDN. And from that, you can infer that there may have been a benefit in actually reducing the cancer growth, and that's what led to the quality of life, but that wasn't the outcome that they looked at in those studies. There were a couple of studies that were initiated on cancer treatment with LDN, and there's no reason given why those studies were terminated. So we wonder if maybe they ran out of money. You know, as you say, I think it is very important to have these types of clinical studies, like a proper phase 2 or phase 3 clinical trial on LDN. But one of the issues is that your listeners should try to understand, and I think maybe this is not common knowledge, but the medical system right now that approves medicines for treatment of cancer is highly biased in favor of medicines that can earn large profits. Okay, and that's just simply because the research that's needed to get approval costs anywhere from, could be anywhere from $10 million to $100 million. So whoever invests that money, they need to get back their investment and then earn a profit on top of that. So any medicine that's not going to earn them any medicine that's not going to give them the return on their investment is not of interest. Okay, so that I think is an important point to note, that there's a big bias in the medical system against LDN and other cheap drugs. Now getting to your question about clinical trials, so what I would really like to see is, and I think you can really show an improvement in survival, patients that are deemed so-called, you know, cancer-free after they've been treated, let's say a breast cancer patient who's had their surgery, but they still have microscopic disease, which is not detected on a scan, I think those would be great patients to study, to treat them with LDN, and actually you can look at the survival. And I believe that you will see significant survival benefits far greater than any chemotherapy or any other toxic conventional medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fascinating. I would love to see that study as well. And our tools for assessing that have improved a lot too. So we have circulating tumor cells now. We have, you know, exosome studies and proteasome. We could really get in there and make very astute conclusions. So I'm with you. Maybe a listener will fund such a trial.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That would be nice. So any closing thoughts for our listeners on this topic?
Well, you know, I think that LDN is definitely something that's worth looking into, worth reading about, and the listeners have to keep in mind that their own cancer doctors, their oncologists, their surgeons, et cetera, they just may not be aware of LDN, and they should also keep in mind my story that, you know, I'm a conventionally trained doctor, and I never believed in these types of things, only really out of ignorance and lack of desire to look for the research. You know, I would have a knee-jerk reaction that anything that's not a conventional therapy, oh, it's not going to work. You know, but that was just the bias, and that was my ignorance. And this type of attitude is still prevalent in the medical profession, and I think your listeners should be aware of that, and they need to do their own homework and help educate their doctors. And, you know, I think they should also seek care with naturopaths and other non-conventional physicians and complement their care with this type of approach so that they can really get the best care.
Yeah, that's great. And that's, you know, congratulations to you for being an enlightened man, an enlightened doctor, because it's not easy to, you know, go through such a difficult training and step through your biases into a wider perspective. But we're all glad that you did.